Welcome to Let's Talk. You're here with Dr. Hassan Batts. I am your host, and we are here to talk about some interesting, hard-hitting issues in our community. And today in the studio, we have Kamari Gafford Davis. Sister, welcome, man.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm well. It is a pleasure to have you here with me. Thank you for joining us. You define yourself as a social worker, a mom, and a wife. That's huge. Tell us about Kamari. We're gonna cut straight to the chase. Tell us, who is Kamari Gafford Davis?
That's a very good question. Kamari Gafford Davis is a woman who is very passionate. Mm. I am a lover of people, but I'm also no nonsense.
No nonsense.
Because I don't like shenanigans.
Now that sounded like a mom. That sounded like Mama Bats right there. He's about no nonsense. What does that mean? You don't like shenanigans and you're no nonsense.
Well, I think that I'm a person who definitely is passionate about people. I love people. I love to engage folks. But at the same time, I like people who are honest. So I think that's what I mean by no nonsense.
So you want the real ones.
I want the real ones.
You want the real. Are they hard to find, few and far between?
You meet people who think that they want to be honest. But then when you really ask them the real honest questions, they're not able to give you the real honest answers. Yeah. Or they don't like what the answers are.
Do they know the truth?
Some people don't.
So some of it's self-awareness.
Yeah.
Now, again, right, you said social worker, mom, and wife. I hear social worker jumping out big. Like, you talking about psychoanalyzing people and digging in, like, pulling back layers, right?
I think I've been doing that my whole entire life.
Really? Well, tell us about your life. Tell us about your life's journey.
Well, I will say that I probably was one of those people that knew very early that I was going to be that child. Mm-hmm. I used to be up the street from my house in my kindergarten teacher's kitchen, drinking tea and eating crumpets, and she'd be telling me her whole life story. And then my mother would call me when the streetlights came on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd run down the street, and she's like, "What are you doing up there in that lady's house?" I'm like, "She's just telling me her secrets."
You were a social worker in training.
I was like five.
Wow. So we're talking about kindergarten, you're sitting there. Now, give us some context. Where was this at? Atlanta, New York, Panama?
This is East Orange, New Jersey.
East Orange, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Wow. How long did you live in East Orange?
Born and raised in East Orange.
Okay.
I'm the only one out of my siblings who was born in New Jersey. Everybody else was born in Pittsburgh, where my parents were from.
That's a big difference.
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
I'm the only New Jersey baby, and I'm the only one that was raised there. And
Yeah,
so I was there my whole entire life until we left in 2014.
And what was it like growing up in East Orange?
I went to Catholic school my whole life.
Okay.
So I'm recovering from that.
So this was a nun that was sitting down telling you her life story.
Actually, I went to public school first.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went to public school first until the fifth grade, and then I went to Catholic school until high school.
People are always surprised to learn that I went to Catholic school when I was very young, and then I went to Catholic high school for 1 year. Shout out to Bishop Lachlan in Brooklyn. Yeah, I actually got kicked out of Bishop Lachlan, which is a famous Catholic school. I got kicked out of Bishop Lachlan, man. So.
Yeah, they weren't very kind to me either.
No.
Yeah, they weren't very kind to me. I got pregnant my senior year. First time out.
Oh, you were in trouble.
Yeah, first time.
First
had
time,
sex.
First senior year. Oh,
first time had sex, got pregnant.
Wow.
And they were ready to kick me out.
You got pregnant the first time having sex.
Yep.
So that's the story. That's the scare tactic that they try to tell us, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's true.
It's true.
The second time, were you on birth control and got pregnant? Because that's the other scare tactic, right?
I was married the second time.
Okay. So you had a baby at 18?
Yes.
Is that Kumar?
That's Kumar.
Who I've met, who is a phenomenal young man.
Yeah, 32 years old. Married with a wife. Yeah, I'll be 32 in October.
Wow, you did a good job with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, born in East Orange, Catholic school, baby at 18. What was that experience like?
It was interesting because I think that I was scared. I knew that I had to go to college. I knew that I had to do something, you know? Right. And I was kind of like, okay, well, still putting around trying to figure it out. But at some point in time, I finally got it together. After being kicked out of college and put on probation and GPA dropping from 3.7 to a 0.02. And then finally, I finally finished. And then I went on to grad school.
So it wasn't easy.
Not at all.
Nobody handed you these degrees.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Nobody handed me anything. Worked hard. A lot of debt for it.
Yeah.
When I graduated from Columbia, I finally was like, oh, maybe I'm not so stupid.
Columbia. You said that just like it was, oh, I graduated from Columbia. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I was determined to go there just to figure out if I was smart or not. Isn't that crazy?
Okay. So after graduating from it, you felt it. You felt affirmed.
Yeah, which is sad, right? That's what they tell you.
I mean, it's part of the scam, right?
Part of the lie.
Part of the lie. It is. But we fall into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to work for these accomplishments. What message do you have for somebody that's struggling? 18, 17 years old, pregnant, kicked out of Catholic school, thinks it's over, right? What message do you have for them?
Keep your head up. Continue to talk to yourself and let yourself know that you are worthy.
Mm.
And that you can have it all. Just keep pushing for it.
You can have it all.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And then, again, like, what is all, right? Because everybody makes you think that all is all these different things and tangible items. But
yeah, these trinkets.
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, all is love. All is having someone who has your back.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
All is having a family that you know will go out there and gun for you, you know?
That's so right.
That's at the end of the day, all for me.
So our producer was saying before we started the show, shout out to James behind the boards. James was saying, I like to ask the question, what means the world to you? You remember that Cam song?
Of course.
There you go. Very few people remember that song when I asked.
That's how old I am.
That's your era. That's our era.
Right.
So Cameron said, what means the world to you? Go ahead. You gotta say it in rhythm, though. What means the world to you?
I gotta say it in rhythm.
You gotta answer in rhythm.
Well, I would say that what means the world to me is my family, my integrity, for sure. Being authentic in every space that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And being comfortable with myself. That's what means the world to me. And being able to give that to my children and my legacy and my grandchildren when I finally have them.
That's beautiful.
I just want to leave passion and legacy and doing the right thing when no one's looking in my legacy.
That's right. That's that integrity. That's your legacy.
That's my legacy.
What you want written on your tombstone.
Absolutely.
She did these things.
Yes.
So for the most part, I interview people that I know. And I know you well, right? Like you've come to the cookouts. We our families have hung out together. Know your husband, know your sons. You often tell us that black leadership is love. Let's talk about leadership. Because that resonates. When I think of you, I think of that statement. Like, you've imprinted that in my mind. As a leader, as a follower, as a friend of many leaders, right? Like that's something that I work towards is leadership. And you said black leadership is love. Can you say something about that for our listeners?
Well, when you think about how, you know, white supremacy culture, white dominant culture lives, right? It lives in a space of cutthroat. It lives in a space of taking what's yours and running with it and leaving everybody behind. And when I think about black leadership, I think about how it's always going to be love because that's just who we are as people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think of stomping on someone to get ahead.
Mm.
If it's not mine, I'm not going to get it. And it's not for me.
If it's not meant for you, you'll never
receive. It's not for me.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
And I don't want it if it's not for me.
And you're not going to hurt somebody in the process.
And I'm not hurting anybody in the process. And I believe that as a black leader, I have to have that legacy of loving on others, pulling them from behind, because that's my job. That's my duty. That's what my legacy to be. And it shouldn't be harmful. Leadership doesn't have to be harmful.
So when you say leadership, what I'm gathering is you're not just talking about Malcolm X or Angela Davis. Like, you're not talking big leadership necessarily, right? What do you mean when you say, like, define leadership in this context?
Leadership could be someone who is a head of an organization,
okay,
a person who's working at a bank, a person who is in a role that where they have persons who are working with them.
Okay.
Because I don't ever look at anybody who's working with me as they're working for me.
Yeah.
We're working together.
That's right.
Towards a goal.
That's right.
So, and if you have that mindset, you'll never look down at somebody like, oh, you're just this,
yeah,
or you're just that, you know, because everybody's in their journey too.
And I've known some of the teams that you've created, and hey, powerful.
Absolutely.
Powerhouses, and the teams are full of love, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about diverse teams. They're not all black.
Not at all.
So is it that you bring that and infuse it into the work culture?
Absolutely. I always let folks know when you work with me, we're working together. We're going to love on each other. If there's an issue, we're going to work it out. We're not going to move forward with a whole bunch of dissension between us, because that's how you end up stepping on people and harming people and lying on people to get ahead.
Yeah.
And there's none of that. We don't need that.
Where does someone start? Because that's who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
But most leaders don't function that way. Most leaders haven't been trained and developed in that way. What are the baby steps that someone can take to get there? whether they're new on their leadership journey or they've been leading for a while?
I believe that people have to know who they are, right? Because at the end of the day, if you don't know who you are as a leader, you're going to harm people. I mean, you're going to harm people. There's no question in that. And also knowing what you value. Okay. So if you value getting the prestige and the name and that's people right. saying, oh, you're the greatest, you know, because your head wants to get swollen, you know, that's great. But at the same time, does that help everybody else?
So you'll do anything for it.
Right. And you'll harm for it.
You'll step on people to get those accolades, to get that award.
In your social worker, you know, hurt people, hurt people.
Hurt people, hurt people. And shout out to Jeannie Garcia. She always tells us healing people help people heal.
Absolutely.
All right, Mama Jeannie, shout out to you. All right, so you just brought that up. I'm a social worker. By training, I often say.
Mm-hmm.
That pisses social workers off when I say that.
Oh, yeah, I can see why.
I'm a social worker by training. No, I'm a social worker. But they said Harriet Tubman was a social worker. So,
yeah.
Hey, there you have it. You said you're a social worker, and you started with that 5 years old. You were listening to people, your teachers, learning about their lives.
I could be in an elevator and be talking to somebody, and 20 minutes later, they're still talking to me.
Yeah.
And my husband could be outside waiting for me. I'll come outside. He's like, who was you talking to? Like, he knows that I was inside.
You never met a stranger before.
I've never met a stranger.
So you've talked about being a social worker. You've talked about being a mom. And then your other identifier was, I'm a wife. And you just mentioned your husband, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean to be a wife?
Well, you know my husband. I have a husband that's
shout out
like,
to Gerard, right?
Shout out to Gerard, because he is a ride or die.
He's
one of those guys that all I have to do, I'll give you an example. I was pregnant with our 16-year-old, and somebody hurt my feelings in the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting a whole bunch of meat, because I was making sandwiches for everybody in the family for their lunches, and I was leaving, and the guy said some nasty remark about the fact that I bought a whole bunch of lunch meat. Got home, I was crying. He's like, who did that to you? Went to the store, all I had to do was point. That's Gerard.
That sounds like a little kid.
That's Gerard.
That's Gerard.
Gerard is all I got to do is just point, and he's on it.
Someone hurt my baby. I'm in the building.
That's him.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the kind of husband I have, and I believe in my heart that that's how you have to be. Like, you're going to show up.
That's what it means to be a husband.
But yes, show
you're
up.
Show up.
Show up, be present.
Yeah.
You know, communicative, and of course every relationship has their issues and concerns, but at the end of the day, both of us were bruised people.
Yeah.
And we
so that's what you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he is.
That's who he is.
And what does it mean to be a wife? What does he need? Or like how does to the people that want to be wives? Can I say that?
Yeah.
Okay, to the people that want to be wives, offer some advice.
Or women who are in long-term relationships, right?
Yeah.
You mean you definitely have to be firm, right? You definitely have to not let people get away with everything. I mean, that's just the reality of it, right? I mean, one of the things that I appreciate about Gerard is that when I ask him, why does he love me so much? He said, because you hold me accountable.
That's powerful. Dr. Francis Cress Wilson says, black love is a revolutionary act.
Absolutely.
It's not easy.
No, it is not.
It's not easy. And it's not always because we're difficult, but because the world is difficult.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to challenge. Hard to navigate.
It's hard to navigate. So when we have a partner, we got to, you know, hold each other down, be ride or die.
Absolutely.
Shout out to my wife, Katara.
Of course. Hey, Katara.
The brilliant, bold, beautiful Katara J.
Beautiful.
My ride or die. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to learn more about Kamari Gafford Davis, the social worker, the mom, the wife. And now for the second segment, we're going to need a couple more identifiers from you.
Okay.
We'll be right back. You're here listening to Dr. Batts on Let's Talk.
WDIY News engages the Lehigh Valley with accurate, unbiased reporting from many sources and volunteer real voices. Listen to WDIY News during Morning Edition, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition, every day here on 88.1 FM, streaming on WDIY.org and the WDIY phone app. WDIY. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to Let's Talk. I am Dr. Hassan Batts, your host, and we are in the studio with Kamari Gafford Davis. Sis, this is a beautiful conversation. We've talked about social work. We've talked about black love. We've talked about, you know, several different things. You talked about what means the world to you. And now I want to know, what keeps you up at night? Right? Like, in this world, what are the stressors and pressures that, like, stir in your soul and have you tossing and turning at night?
What's sad is that I actually have suffered from insomnia since grad school. So I do not sleep good at night at all. Probably anxiety keeps me up because I'm constantly, my mind is always going. I'm constantly racing and thinking of what's next and mm-hmm. what could happen and all those different things. So when I think about what keeps me up at night, it's probably all the work that has to be done. You know,
say more about the work.
Yeah. So, for example, even when you talk about people doing harm, that's mm-hmm. like my goal. Like, my goal is to not do harm. I'm going to be doing a keynote for the Chamber in a couple weeks for LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And again, my goal is not to do harm. And when I speak to leaders or I do work in the community, I tell people the same thing. Let's try not to do harm. If that's we right. all just didn't do harm, yeah. the world would be a better place.
That's right.
Just doing right. that. You know, just not thinking that other people are less than you. Other people are not worthy of something.
That's right.
You know, looking down on others and thinking that, oh, they just want to be in that position. You yeah. know, not recognizing that people are human and having humanity for others. Mm-hmm. That's harmful. And so that's yeah. what keeps me up.
That's one of my leadership principles, right? When I teach leadership or I mentor and support people, one of the things we say is do no harm. And then we go even further in a relationship basis and we say do no intentional harm. Because if we're in relationship, I'm going to hurt you, but it's not going to be intentional. And I think that's the difference oftentimes too, right? Like, and when you do mess up, acknowledge it, own it.
Absolutely.
Right? And fix it. So doing no harm, the harm in the world is what keeps you up. I mean, when you look at the news right now, all the things that are going on, is anything in particular outside of your daily life that brings you trouble?
Sometimes you worry about the way things are being handled.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I'm in the DEI space. That's the work that I do. And the fact that no one thinks it's important. You see that people don't honor others, so they don't think that that's something that we should talk about or whatever the yeah, case may be, yeah. which is scary because you're literally ignoring groups of people who are being harmed every single day because no one thinks that that's important.
Define DEI for our listeners.
So diversity, equity, inclusion. Acceptance and belonging is DEIAB, mm-hmm. and that's the space that I've been in for about 20 years.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
And it was sexy for a minute, right? Post-George Floyd.
Absolutely.
During COVID, all these corporations invested in DEI, people, every university, every municipality in 2020, mm-hmm. and now they're starting to divest. They're starting to go back to snap right. back to business as usual, right?
Right, which is pretty much what white dominant culture is, right? There's snap back to it. Like, once anything starts to make its way out of being this little package program, it's like, oh, no, we can't do that. Let's pull it back.
It's uncomfortable. Yeah.
And we have to become uncomfortable.
This is the second time you use this word, white dominant culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone listening right now that is infuriated by
Absolutely.
That term. So let's talk about it.
Well, when I think of white dominant culture or white supremacy culture, I think of that as all of the systems that we navigate on a daily basis. I don't look at it as a person.
Okay.
I look at it as a systems. So the systems that we navigate, which is banking, housing,
criminal justice, child care,
food. You know, criminal justice, food, everything, yeah. every system that we navigate on a daily basis, mental health, mm-hmm. everything is white dominant culture, white supremacy culture. So I'm definitely not talking about a person in particular. I'm talking about systems that we navigate.
And what is it about these systems that you're referring to? Like, how do they function? Like, what's at the heart of them?
Well, at the heart of them is oppression, mm. right? You know, one of the things that because I'm a professor, and I teach sociology and social work. And one of the things I ask my students every semester is there a possibility for capitalism and racism to be separated?
Okay.
Right? And most of them say no. Okay. They say that you have to completely unravel it in order to bring it back again.
So what's the professor say?
Well, I say that they're probably right, right? I mean, the mm-hmm. reality is, and that's what a lot of people say, let's just unravel the whole system and bring it back together again.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, folks aren't going to do that, right? But, if people are thriving off a system that's harming others and they don't see any problem with it because they think those people deserve it, mm-hmm. they're going to continue doing what they do.
Or you hear people say, well, I didn't do it. I didn't own any slaves, right?
Absolutely.
I didn't steal any land from the indigenous Americans.
That all the time.
But they never want to dissect where the wealth has come
or
from.
Or dismantle it.
Or dismantle it. I mean, if it's working, why dismantle it, right?
Right. If it's working for them.
That's what I mean. If it's working for them, why dismantle it? Mm-hmm. Because they're not directly doing it.
No, they're not. But at the same time, you're perpetuating it if you're not trying to dismantle it.
Okay, so let's go back to that conversation of baby steps, right? What advice, what suggestions, what methodologies do you have for the person that is perpetuating, right? They're culpable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What can they change? What's one thing yeah. they can change? Where do they start?
Well, for one, recognize that you're being complicit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, for example, one of the things that I would love is for all of us to be liberated, and not just some of us, right? So, and sometimes you hear white-skinned identity people say, but I am liberated. But if you think you're better than someone else, or you think someone's less than you, you're not liberated either. You're liberated when you believe that you have to, when everybody does well, everybody does well. When everybody does better, everybody does better. So when you have that thinking process, that's when you start to become liberated.
And is that possible under capitalism?
Absolutely. But it's also, it's changed mindset. Changed minds, changed hearts. Isn't that what Marcy Lesko says?
Something like that, right? Something shout out to Marcy. Yeah. Something like that. Change minds, change hearts.
Yeah. You have to recognize that it's a system that we're all under, and we have to start basically dismantling
it. This is sounding like the Matrix, man. You got the blue pill or the red pill, right? Like
just saying.
Which one do you want, man?
Right.
Or the what's the other one? The allegory of the cave, right? Like you come out the cave in the shadows, man. Like so you have this awareness that you've found or developed or earned, right, over the years.
Right.
But you're living in a world and particularly a community that lacks awareness.
Absolutely.
How do you navigate that? You came from East Orange, you went to Columbia, and now you live in here in the Lehigh Valley, which is radically different.
Radically different and very anti-black.
And very anti-black. No one has said those words on the show before. What does that mean, anti-black?
When I came here, I was shocked. Like when we moved here, one of the things that I looked at, because I was bringing black boys, I looked at your rates for police brutality, I looked at the rates for police interaction, and I did not even pay attention to other things. I looked at your report cards for your school districts.
Yeah.
As a mom moving here with black boys, right.
Because you have black boys.
Yes.
And black boys.
And when I got here, I was very shocked at the fact that there's so much anti-blackness here, where people literally are half black or part black and don't want any parts of it because they don't believe it's beautiful. They don't think that it's good. And you see it and hear it all the time.
So you were raised different. You were raised
absolutely raised differently.
Pro-black, is that the language you'd use? Or to love blackness? To
love blackness. I mean, my siblings tell me I'm radical. But because I'm probably on the extreme end. They love their blackness, but I'm more like, okay, we have to also do something so that we can empower ourselves.
So
to move
action
forward.
Has to be taken.
Action has to be taken.
So does loving blackness equate to hating whiteness?
No, it does not. Because I love everyone.
Because there's someone listening, and that's what they're going to say, right?
Not at all. Because me loving my blackness doesn't mean that you have to dislike me, or it doesn't mean that I'm taken away from you. Because we can all be who we are.
Okay.
But it's about us loving on each other. Because my goal is for us all to be liberated.
You said you don't want to see anyone harmed.
Not at all.
You want to see everyone liberated and no one harmed.
No one harmed.
And
because we're all worthy of that. We're all worthy of having that. We're all worthy of being in a space where we can all thrive.
And you've also said there's enough to go along.
Absolutely.
Around.
The scarcity mindset that's been taught and that we literally all believe is lies. There's enough for everybody.
There's enough for everybody.
Absolutely.
We throw away enough, right?
We do.
We throw away a lot. Let me ask you this. Who are some people that have been influential in your life? Because you have a very, I don't know if unique is the word, right? But you have a very, unique understanding and mindset that has taken work and development. Who has poured into you? Who's contributed to that?
Honestly, my mother definitely, from the beginning, she definitely poured into me. She would always tell me, look people in the eye, don't look down, have pride in yourself. And then as time went on, my godmother was very strong and powerful in that sense. I have a lot of mentors, great mentors. Cassandra Davis, shout out to her. Actually, I'm going to be working for her this summer at Drew University, teaches a class.
Shout out to Cassandra Davis.
She always keeps me working.
Shout out to the mentors, man. Without them, where would we be, right?
Absolutely. Camilla Green, Phyllis Alexander.
Shout out to the elders, Camilla, Elder Camilla, and Elder
yes,
Phyllis.
Yes. So just people who have poured into me and just let me know that just keep going. Regardless, just keep going. And as Sister Phyllis told me just 2 days ago, at a slow pace.
Keep going at a slow pace.
Yes.
Because she wants you to continue to pour into yourself. She doesn't want us to drop.
Mm-mm.
Shout out to Elder Phyllis, man. Mm-hmm. She's always telling us to love on ourselves, to not work too hard, and don't let this society destroy
us. Not at all.
Because she doesn't want us to drop.
No, she does not.
So what is your calling? Is that fair to ask?
Yeah.
Why are you here? What is your calling? What are you going to leave the world with? And we started there.
My calling is to pour into people. I'm definitely a healer.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to love on others in a way they might not be able to love on themselves, which means that I have to make sure that I pour into myself so I don't just give everything away.
That's right.
Right? I mean, I remember when I got sick a couple of years ago, you called me immediately and said, self-care is revolutionary. I'll never forget that when you said that to me.
Yeah.
And I make sure I get my massages, my facials.
Yeah, because they tell us we can't pour from an empty cup. Elder Phillips says that all the time.
All the time.
We can't pour from an empty
cup. No, you cannot. No, you cannot. So just making sure that I have people around me and surround people around me who are positive and loving.
You say that like it's so easy.
It's not. But at the same time, you also can you could feel toxicity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could feel it. You could walk in a room and feel somebody's arguing, right? You could feel it automatically. I mean, I'm empath. I'm quite sure you are too, right? So I can feel energy. I can feel when someone's not feeling good. I can feel when someone's off.
So
you know?
What do you do with that though? When you find yourself in a relationship, in a job, in a space that does not serve you, that is harmful, what do you do, and what are you advising the listeners to do?
Of course, you don't want to give yourself away so much that there's nothing left. Of course, you don't want to do that. But at the same time, getting therapy is definitely important. That's something that we do not talk about in the Black community.
That continues to show up on this show.
People
are starting to really
to get
support
therapy. People need to get therapy.
Yep.
Like, I mean, not just because I'm a social worker, do I believe in it. I think I've always believed in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that none of you
were giving your kindergarten teacher therapy. So.
right. My mother would laugh and like, what are you talking to that woman about?
So get therapy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So getting therapy, making sure that you are always being observant of yourself, because self-reflection and self-awareness is extremely, extremely important, which is the reason why you need to go get therapy probably, right? Also recognizing that we're all human. We all make mistakes.
That's right. You don't have to be perfect.
We don't have to be perfect. I think that's one of, again, that dominant culture tells you that you have to be perfect all the time. And
you got
to
get it
and
right.
I'm one of those A-type persons too, but at the same time, I also know that I have to give myself grace.
Yeah, I'm following you.
Yeah, I have to give myself grace. And I have to give you grace as well.
So not only do you deserve grace, but other people deserve
it definitely.
Too.
Even when I meet somebody who's like a person that's, you know, waving a Confederate flag, right? I mean, that person was taught those things.
Yeah, don't tell you it's heritage, not hate.
Absolutely. And I can definitely say to you, you know what? Well, you can have your opinion, but at the same time, wouldn't it be nice to just love on everybody? Like, do we have to be so angry?
You can have your heritage.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't have to include the hate.
No, it does not.
All right, we're getting ready to close out. Before we close out, I got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
What are you reading right now?
Let's see. I am reading, I'm not going to lie. Some of these books, I don't even know what they're called. But I have been reading this book, Punished for Dreaming by Bettina Love.
Hey, Bettina, shout out to
Bettina Love. She's I have such a crush on her brain. Black AF History by Michael Harriet and The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. Those are three books that I'm reading right now.
Those are three powerhouse books.
I read before I go to bed. That's probably why I can't sleep.
That's why you have the insomnia right there. What's keeping you up at night? My selection and reading.
My reading list.
What are you writing right now? Because you're an author also. We're going to have to get you back on the show.
Yeah, I'm writing right now. I don't know if it's an editorial for your book or if it's just an article. I don't know. But I'm writing about how white dominant culture, white supremacy culture affects our psyche and how we end up doing harm because we're trying to run for that banner that everybody keeps telling you that
that's
we're going
right.
for.
We want the cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I'm writing right now.
Okay, and last question is, who's your favorite rapper right now?
Who's my favorite rapper?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is that a microaggression?
That's not a microaggression, but you're going to think you're gonna look at me different.
It's going to tell me a lot about you. Because you're going to say Pop Smoke or something like that.
You know what song you know what song I've played four times today?
The Woe?
No. Don't judge me. Like What by Cardi B.
Well, you got to sing the chorus for us. I don't know that
one. No, I'm not singing that chorus.
You played it four times.
You know Cardi?
I know who Cardi B is, but it's on repeat.
Nah. But I also love Kendrick.
Now she's going to end with a conscious rapper, right?
Exactly.
Listen, we are here with Kumari Gafford Davis. Sister, thank you for joining us. It has been a pleasure. This is Let's Talk. I am Dr. Bass. In closing, anything you want to add for our listeners?
Thank you so much for having me in. Hope to see you soon.
And shout out to Cardi B.
Shout out to Cardi B.
Every time I see him, I'm thinking Cardi B now, right? All right, take care. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.